Today on Maine Calling, Neighbors Helping Neighbors, the grassroots response to ice in Maine. The recent surge in ice activity in Maine mobilized many people to step up and help, often doing things they'd never done before. People volunteered to walk immigrant children to school, delivered food to people afraid of leaving their homes, followed ICE agents and recorded their activity, and stepped up in many other creative ways. Today, many people are on strike. In some cases, churches and nonprofit organizations led the efforts, while in other cases, the initiative happened organically through social media. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we hear from some of those deeply involved in helping and protecting their neighbors. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and offering custom homes in Quarry Cottages, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And by Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The targeted surge of immigration enforcement in Maine has caused anxiety and turmoil in many communities, especially among immigrants. People have responded in a wide variety of ways, from delivering food to fundraising to driving kids to school to going on strike. Today, we're going to hear about some of those efforts. My guest today is the Reverend Sarah Ewing Merrill. She is lead pastor at Hope Gateway Church in Portland. She also co-founded Greater Portland Family Promise. We invite you to join the conversation. Did you get involved this week in any of the efforts to help others? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
We are having this conversation as many students, businesses, and others are participating in what's being called a national strike. This morning, a number of faith leaders held a news conference at Portland City Hall about the protest. I think it might still be going on.
You are not at First Parish Church, that's right.
You are not at the news conference, you're here, but you have been involved in the efforts. Tell us about the thinking behind the strike today and more generally how faith leaders have come together in support of immigrants.
Well, I think this is really a moment for all hands on deck in whatever ways we can. Businesses are stepping up and closing. Students are stepping up and leaving school. People are stepping up and rallying. And the press conference today is a real collaboration of a lot of efforts from labor to faith leaders to No Ice for Maine is coordinating that effort and really inviting all of us to be about the work of change and saying that we don't stand for what is happening, and whatever ways that each of us can do that, that's what's happening.
Do you feel as though this ICE activity has brought disparate faith leaders together in a way that maybe other social justice initiatives have not?
I think that's true. I also think that it was more than a year ago when I called together a group of faith leaders that I've been in Portland for 19 years, so I'm well connected and invited people who have been a part of community to be about organizing together. And so people from Buddhist and Jewish and Unitarians, UCC Episcopal friends and independent churches have been gathering every other week to organize together and to collaborate on various issues. So this moment we were ready for because we were in relationship. But there definitely are more people that have stepped up because the needs are urgent and very clear.
Tell me about your congregation, your parishioners. What have they wanted to do? What have they been doing in the last couple weeks?
Everybody wants to be doing something. And I think action is really a healing thing for our anxiety and for the fear and angst that we have. But people have been doing things like giving kids rides to school, delivering groceries. We have a network that's developed for getting people rides to work. But all of these things are sort of haphazard and one by one, and everybody just trying to take care of one another. And systems are developing, but they're also really locally based, which is also a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to be one of the legacies of this couple of weeks, is that there will be more, as you said, systems or more organization in the future?
Maybe, but I do really hope that neighbors, the relationships that people have built and the capacity that people see they have for helping one another will sustain us for the long haul, that we can be more and do more for one another all the time.
Sarah, I'm going to ask you about an email that's come in already. This is from Gwyneth. She writes, "As a pastor in the Portland area, I'm struggling with how to share about resources safely due to the federal government's policies regarding how immigrants are treated. For instance, there are a number of immigrants I know who need rides to work. But if I email out a list of names and addresses, and that list got into the hands of ICE, it could be extremely dangerous for them. Even sharing about resources on your show could potentially put people in danger." So I'm wondering, Sarah, your thoughts about Gwyneth's concerns.
I think we do have to be discerning about how we're sharing what, and that's why we do most of our organizing on Signal Chat. That's why my church has a Signal Chat where we've been sharing these names. And then we actually ask individuals to connect with other individuals, not to share massive information publicly, so that things can be as private as possible. So small groups on secure ways of communicating, and then actually inviting people to do one-to-one or really small groups is the safest.
For our listeners who don't know, what is Signal Chat?
Signal Chat is like, it's an app that you can download on your phone. It's like WhatsApp, but it's not owned by Meta. It's actually a nonprofit, owned by a nonprofit, and it's where a lot of organizing is happening.
And what a sign of the times that churches have Signal Chat accounts.
Indeed, it is.
On the line with us now is Angela Stone, who is founder and executive director of Maine Needs. Thanks so much for calling in, Angela.
Yeah, thank you for including me on this.
You know, we've talked to you before. We know that your organization works with caseworkers and social workers to directly help people with their basic needs. And you've helped a lot of immigrant families since your founding. How has this past week or 2 weeks been different for you than the weeks past?
Sure. Well, a lot of our caseworkers are caseworkers, teachers, nurses, and street outreach teams are immigrants themselves. And so we're seeing them not feeling comfortable and safe to get in their cars and drive here to pick up. So we are reaching out to those organizations. We have other people from those organizations that do feel comfortable and are coming in to pick up on their behalf. Obviously, a lot of the immigrant providers are working directly with the immigrant population as well. And so it's figuring out how to reach not just the provider, but also the person that they were going to be coming in and picking up those resources for. We've gotten a lot of requests for people who are sheltering in place that need food gift cards, and the response from the community has been, beautiful. We also have a lot of requests coming in for babies and toddlers that are at home and sheltering in place, and the parents are looking for diapers and wipes, cleaning supplies and toiletries. The response for diapers is absolutely overwhelming.
I wanted to ask you about that, Angela. I actually saw a little bit of that happen on social media. You all put out a call for diapers. What happened?
Yeah, so we put out, a lot of what we do is post on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, and that's how we reach people. And we put out, one little square saying that we needed boxes of diapers for families that were sheltering in place, and the outpouring of the community. I mean, we had a parking lot that was incredibly full, you know, one recent Saturday, and our entire space, any wall that was free, floor to ceiling was being filled with boxes of diapers. Our conference room right now is packed full of diapers. And so, you know, we're trying to get those out to as many of those organizations, from, you know, Saco and Biddeford to Greater Portland area, Lewiston, Bangor, as quickly as we can. And the other big need that is always a need at Maine Needs is for cleaning and toiletry kits. So if anybody is wanting to help in a really, you know, tangible way, those cleaning and toiletry kits you can find on maineneeds.org/kits. And those are just really basic things, you know, things that everybody needs, a way to clean their clothes, a way to clean their dishes, dish soap, body soap, shampoo, conditioner, toothpaste. Toilet paper, obviously, is something that people are going to be running out of. We've seen a lot of response from the community also donating grocery gift cards, donating money towards for us to be able to buy grocery gift cards. And we've been sending those out to immigrant-focused organizations as well. I think one of the things I want to say is a lot of the organizations that we're talking to and the leaders of these immigrant-focused communities have basically said that people are now, they're just afraid of losing their jobs. Like, these are people who are here. They have legal paperwork to work and are working, but they're afraid to go to work right now. They're afraid to leave their house and get in their cars to drive anywhere. And so they're sheltering in place. So for anyone that does employ an immigrant family and is helping them to be able to pay their rent, if you can help in any way, or if you or your coworkers can help in any way, to make sure that they can keep their job, that's going to mean a lot. Like, we don't want to see this go from either, you know, deportation or eviction for people who have done everything they can to be here legally and are a loved part of our community. Same thing for kids in school. Like, the amount of kids that are affected by what is happening is very real. Like, I spoke at a middle school in Portland, and the kids were very upset. I mean, visibly, like, they were walking around crying. And this is before all of this, in December, right before Christmas, and child was taken that they all knew. And, you know, these are middle schoolers walking around crying, and it's changing how their day is, you know, how they're able to, you can't learn when you're that worried about losing your friends or about what happened to your friend. So this is very real. And if anybody can help, by making sure that people are not fired from their job, landlords are not evicting people. Everyone's just trying to stay safe and keep their family safe. So
yeah,
these are delicate times.
Yeah. Thank you for those insights. I wanted to ask you, I have a feeling because you were calling for toiletries, I know the answer, but I was going to ask if Maine Needs has been feeling overwhelmed by the response, and have you been able to keep up?
We feel overwhelmed in the best way possible. I mean, the requests have always been pouring in, but to see the community show up in this way has been really just fuel for us. You know, I think everybody that's here, whether it be volunteers or staff, we feel the love. You know, I think you see a lot of division, you see a lot of narratives that don't sit well. But here inside these doors, like, there's a lot of hope, and there's a lot of love, and, you know, it's been nice to be part of. It's been a nice place to come to work and see that people do love their community, and they love their immigrant community and the families that are here and that have worked hard to be here. And that's what we see. That's what we see in those boxes of diapers. That's what we see in, you know, money pouring in for grocery gift cards. That's what we see in these requests that are being fulfilled, and a full parking lot on a, you know, a Saturday, a Tuesday or a Thursday, like it's love. And it's people seeing a little bit of themselves in others.
Angela Stone, thank you so much for calling in. Angela Stone is the founder and executive director of Maine Needs. We're turning now to Sarah Gay, who is an educator, parent, and union leader in South Portland. Sarah, thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're so welcome. So glad I can join you today.
You know, we've been hearing about students missing school due to fear of immigration enforcement. How are your local schools and community members responding?
Sure. I think we are probably seeing fairly comparable absences and fairly comparable impact on staff as some of our neighboring districts. I know this is, it feels a little cheesy to say, but the helpers are helping. Educators have stepped up so many times in the past to do impossible things when that is what our students have needed to be safe, to be stable, and to have opportunities that are still accessible to them. And we're doing it again, because that's what we do. I think it's pretty incredible, and I hope that if folks hear nothing else from me, you hear that educators, everyone from our ed techs, our clerks, our teachers, school counselors, administrators, top to bottom, everybody has stepped up in such an incredible way. And it is a profound amount of work. It is a profound amount of time and energy. And yeah, we sure are feeling and building that love and hope together, but there is still a lot of very real fear. We have some incredible supporters in our community, stemming from a combination of neighborhood groups and PTO meetings. There's a mutual aid group called SOPO Helps that has been providing direct support to our neighbors. That's everything from delivering diapers, like that is the word of the day, and formula, food, helping people with transportation, supporting bus rides and bus stops. If anyone is interested in donating to them on Venmo, you can do so at SOPO Helps, SOPOHELPS. Those donations will be going directly to folks in our community in whatever way they need the most.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for calling in today. I understand we have another educator calling in, Carrie calling in from Portland. Hi, Carrie. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much. So yeah, my name's Carrie Doughty. I am the president of the Portland Teachers Association, so the teachers union in Portland. And I appreciate the time. I just wanted to share with all of you, sort of from the outside to the inside. We started with St. Paul, Minnesota, reaching out to us, teachers union to teachers union. They gave us extraordinary amounts of information, reaching out to say, we wish we had known these things that we're sharing with you when things started in Minnesota, and have continued to be people that I speak to several times a day. So I wanted to say the helpers, it's across the country. We recently both, we meaning St. Paul and myself in Portland, just got word of the next ICE invasion. And where that's going to be, and we've started reaching out to teachers unions there. But beyond that, in the local, it has been, I'm going to piggyback on Sarah as well, Sarah Gay, who she and I have met several times and collaborated. The community response has been unbelievable, and a lot of it in terms of our schools specifically has been, you know, parents helping with walking school buses, getting kids to and from school, watching the perimeters of schools to keep people safe, being present during dismissal and drop-offs in the morning. Within our schools, too, there's a lot of quiet work, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share this with you all here. There's a lot of quiet work that's been going on within the schools across, you know, educators, ed techs, all staff in getting families food who need it, getting kids whatever they need. Also, colleague to colleague, colleagues approaching each other and saying, hey, would you like to ride to work with me? Can I give you a ride home? Something pretty special that we just got to an agreement on is also the opportunity for staff to donate their accrued sick days to cover those who need it, so that people can continue to get paid.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for calling in. Carrie, Teachers Union President in Portland. We do need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are discussing the many ways community members have responded to the surge in ICE arrests over the past 2 weeks. Joining us for the hour is the Reverend Sarah Ewing Merrill, who is lead pastor at Hope Gateway Church in Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you looking to get involved with volunteer efforts, or have you been already? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Jake Fahey, who is Faith in Action Coordinator for First Parish. That is, of course, the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Portland in that historic building. Jake, thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate you.
Yeah, so you are Faith in Action Coordinator. What does that mean for the people who attend First Parish, and what has that meant in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Unitarian Universalist Church is a place that's open to folks who identify as being connected to a faith or not. But the center value is having love at the center of all that we do. And so putting faith into action is really how we walk and embody our faith in each and every day, in each and every moment of our lives. And so especially during moments of crises when our neighbors are under attack and are feeling threatened, it's more than ever the opportunity for us to step forward and say, what does it mean to be a person of faith? And I think we see it each and every day from people like Reverend Sarah, who I respect very much, and a lot of people who have just really taken to the streets, taken to the schools, taken to really show up for each other in a beautiful way. And what I've been telling folks is to get on your own front lines. I know for some people, it's just spending more time with their kids. You know, I've been feeling that today, that every moment with our young ones is a precious one that not only all of us get to experience each moment alive. And so doing that, and if we have relationships, reach out to those who we think are who are struggling, who need help, and you know, bringing them groceries or supporting them with childcare or showing up at the schools and making sure that kids are safe at their school bus stops and at home, and doing all that we can, and really finding what is our front line. And we've been telling our congregation this, because this is just one crisis of many to come. And we need our communities deeper, more connected, and more relationally held. So that's how we're showing up right now.
Jake, we at the beginning of the program spoke about the fact that faith leaders were gathering at First Parish to talk about events today and tomorrow. What would you like to say about the meaning of what's going on right now? Why a strike? Why does a strike make a statement about ICE?
For those that have been, you know, following what's going on in our world and in our country, we know that follow the money tends to be a phrase that helps people understand some of the horror and terror that happens in our communities. So it really is an economic problem that we're running up against. People with immense amounts of wealth, immense amounts of greed, and are doing things to strike fear, strike division, and create opportunities to, you know, just add to their ever-growing wealth piles. And so it honestly takes opportunities for people to stop and see that the consumerist nation we live in is causing all kinds of damage. And for people to really hear and see what's happening, those that matter and that can make the difference have to see that there's an economic change as well. And so that's part of the effort, and to really get on people's radars that we cannot go back to normal, that we need to create systems of support and care for one another, and really do all that we can to disrupt what is allowing those in power to keep doing what they're doing and wreaking havoc on our communities.
Jake, a very specific question. I understand you've been involved in training verifiers. Tell us how the faith community has been involved in this effort called ICE Watch, what a verifier is, and how you've been involved.
Yeah, there's been a number of faith communities and non-faith members of our community who have been showing up to really help us identify and know when it is true that ICE is in a certain area there's been so much fear and rumor about where ICE is or is not. And so the Verifier Network's been an attempt to help people really know what's happening and where it's happening. And so where they can be safe and where they can shelter when they need to. That's my little son. He's need help. But really just creating a network of support.
Oh, shoot, Jake, I think we lost you.
I think he was going to say a network of support surrounding people all the time.
Well, Jake, I hope that it's a fun reason that we lost you, that maybe your baby grabbed the phone or something. It was awfully nice to hear that little voice on the air. Jake Fahey is with First Parish. He is Faith in Action Coordinator. Sarah, is there anything you'd like to add to what Jake said, even though I was going to ask you if you had a question for Jake, but we won't go in that direction.
I would just emphasize what Jake said about connecting with neighbors and really checking in on people individually. If, you know, if there's anybody in your life that you're in relationship with who feels vulnerable, I have a friend who wanted me to make sure to tell you that she's telling me where she's going every day and she's sharing her location with me because even though she's been granted asylum recently, she still feels very vulnerable. And so just having people know that they're cared for. And also I've realized that many immigrants don't know about this Verifier network, that there are 1,000 people in Portland out on the streets watching out to make sure that our streets are safe and that anyone suspicious is noted and followed and taken, not just let go to do what they're going to do. So we've got your back.
A 1,000 people in Portland alone.
Yeah.
Joining us on the line now is Anthony Fiore. He's one of the organizers of the Kennedy Park Pickup Soccer Group. Anthony, thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about Kennedy Park Pickup Soccer. Who participates and why does it mean so much to you?
Yeah, so we have people participating from all over the state, but then also all over the world. We've had players from around 70 different countries play in all 16 counties in Maine. And so I guess it means a lot to me because there's a lot of just social bridging between cultures and nationalities and age groups that happens at Kennedy Park in the pickup soccer games there.
Yeah. During this past couple of weeks, what have you been seeing? Have you been seeing participants not show up?
Yeah, so we stopped our games for a while because most of our players are immigrant players. And so for safety reasons, we wanted to not risk having anybody come out unnecessarily. And so a lot of players were too afraid to leave their houses, too afraid to go to school, go to work. So we've, instead of organizing pickup soccer games, we've been organizing grocery delivery to those players who can't leave their homes. And then also organizing some rides to work and whatnot for other players who feel like they have to. So we've had a lot of people who, some of the players who are able to leave because they have citizenship and whatnot, have been helping with those grocery deliveries. So we've really seen soccer players rally to help each other out. And then also other people in the soccer world, like Gabe Hoffman Johnson from the Parts of Pine and whatnot, just donating funds to help us pay for those groceries. So that's been very helpful.
Anthony, you know, a lot of people in Maine maybe don't know as many immigrant families as you do through your participation in the pickup soccer group. What would you like to say to people all over the state who may be listening right now?
Yeah, I think the soccer world in Maine is very special because there's not a ton of places where a lot of cross connections are happening between immigrants and non-immigrants. Like people very commonly like to say about Maine that, oh, everyone's only half a degree of separation away. But honestly, between the immigrant world and non-immigrant world and communities in Maine, I don't know if that's so true. Even in areas where people are very supportive of immigrants, like in Portland, they're often kind of living parallel lives. I knew a ton of people who really wanted the help this past couple of weeks, but they just really didn't know many immigrant families or any. We kind of became like a hub to connect people with families that they could help with grocery deliveries with and whatnot. So I guess it's just one, this kind of crisis has illustrated, I guess, in one of the many particular benefits and special things that make the soccer world special here in Maine.
Well, Anthony, thanks so much for calling in. That was Anthony Fiore, who helps with the Kennedy Park Pickup Soccer Group in Portland. We're going to go now to John Goodboo, who is with the Capital Area New Mainers Project, Executive Director of Capital Area New Mainers Project, which is a nonprofit in Augusta. Jonathan, we've been talking a lot with people in Portland and Lewiston and Biddeford over this past week. Tell us what the scene has been in Augusta. What has it been like for you and for the people you work with up there?
You know, I will say, I think a lot of families that we work with have been on edge and nervous, and I'm not sure anyone likes to have an encounter with an armed officer asking for their identity. We've not seen a lot of as many like sightings as we've seen in other parts of the state. That being said, that I think the anxiety and the fear still persist in the community. So we've been doing what we can to support those in our community, and whether that be transportation or groceries or other types of support they might need in that moment, and then finding safe ways for the larger community to connect together if everyone's kind of feeling less secure at the moment.
Mm. And we all heard this big announcement yesterday that ICE was ending its surge in Maine. Wondering what your reaction is to that announcement and whether the people who you work with are actually feeling any relief or not really.
I mean, I think we're all just waiting to see what happens next. I mean, I think the last 2 weeks for many have made folks nervous, but, you know, it's been you know, we've seen a number of families experience having a family member taken over the past 7 months in our area. And so I don't think that goes fully away. I think there might be some relief, but I think that, you know, the key will be seeing what happens next.
Thanks so much for calling. That's Jonathan Goodboo with with the Capital Area New Mainers Project. I'm going to turn now back to you, Sarah, and I'm wondering about the care that you as a pastor give to those in your congregation and how you're thinking about this trauma that many people have gone through and how you can help them in that way.
It's really true that people, I mean, when people have left their home countries to come here, it's because they have experienced trauma. And so this whole experience is re-traumatizing. But on Sunday, last Sunday, we prayed for people who think that this terror is safer than the terror that they fear if they returned to their home country. And this terror is pretty awful. So you can imagine that terror that they imagine, that they expect, would be a reality if they return to their home country is because they left because they were in danger. Most of the people that I am in relationship with are asylum seekers, and most of and have come here to seek asylum. And so it's all we can do is reassure people that we are here for them, but I haven't, you know, I've wanted to lie to people to say it's all going to be fine. You're safe. It's good. And that's not true. I don't know that. And so we just try to stand in solidarity as much as we can and be present for the specific needs that people have.
We'll go to Rosemarie calling from South Portland. Hi, Rosemarie. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you? Thank you so much for having me talk today. I do chair the South Portland School Board, and so I've certainly seen the impact that Sarah Gay talked about as the union leader about what's happening. But I just wanted to add to what Sarah just said, because I think this is reopening trauma. And so even if there's a decrease in ICE, which I don't believe, but even if there is, this trauma that gets reopened just doesn't go away because we say, oh, it's now safe outside. Like, I have families that I've been where I've been delivering food, families I've been notarizing for who've had who've had members taken. I spoke yesterday with a man who was trying to say to me, I wish my English was as good as yours, and he speaks Portuguese, Lingala, and French. I mean, way beyond what we can do. And so I guess if I were going to say anything to people, it's make friends with them. Like, I have people who have come into my home, who've had dinner with me, who sat around my fire pit. Like, they're friends. They're not just people I'm reaching out and helping, but they're people that people who I know and consider part of my circle, you know. So I think that's really important. Someone spoke before, oh, you know, somebody wants to help, but they don't know anybody. Yeah, it's easy to get to know them. Just start talking to them, you know, meet them, greet them, learn some words in their language, like become their friends. Don't just, you know, I think this idea that we've all, you know, the community is coming together, and I think that's fabulous, and I think people reaching out is fabulous, but these people need to be part of your household. Like, they need to know that they're really safe around you. And I'm just sitting here in a parking lot right now with boxes of groceries, you know, in the back of my car. I'm getting ready to deliver, and I'm delivering them to people I know. I'm notarizing for people I know. I mean, I'd notarize for others as well. I'll do whatever I can do, but I just think that recognizing the re-traumatization that Sarah spoke about and that Sarah Ewing spoke about, and really embracing these people as part of your community, not just living in your community, I think is really critical.
Thank you, Rosemarie, calling from South Portland. We are going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What is happening all over Maine to bring people together or to bring aid to those who need it? Joining me today, the Reverend Sarah Ewing Merrill, who is lead pastor at Hope Gateway, as well as co-founder of Greater Portland Family Promise. You can share your comments and questions. What have you heard about that's inspirational in your community, or what have you done? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also call, of course, 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Josh Christie, who is an author and co-founder of Print, a bookstore, which is based in Portland. Thanks so much for calling in, Josh. And I understand that Print is closed today. Tell us why you did that.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. Thanks for having me on. And thanks to you, Sarah, as well. I appreciate all that you're doing here. We decided at Print, and with the input and really direction of our staff, who we listen to closely for when we're making decisions, to close today as part of the national general strike. So we're closed along with almost 200 other main businesses, in addition to tons of other businesses that are open but contributing through donations.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw that on social media, several places, for example, Becky's Diner in Portland, staying open but donating 100% of their proceeds. What is your thinking about the strike? What does it do to be closed today?
Yeah. So as a lot of other callers have already said, like, it's really meant to show collective action and show that we as stakeholders in our community really can make an impact. I think that, like, a broader national strike, the idea is a huge economic impact. I'm not too I don't really have illusions that a single day being closed will have a huge economic impact, but it's really a signal that, you know, businesses can come together, businesses and workers can come together and make a really noticeable impact. People are going to notice that this many businesses in Maine are closed today. And it really came together kind of quickly, and I'm impressed by how quickly and how much it came together. You know, it's so many small businesses in a hard time of the year to close for a day. And I can't remember another thing that so many small businesses in our community have come together at once to do something together.
Well, Josh, thanks for calling in. Josh Christie, co-founder of Print, a bookstore, which is in Portland. And now calling in is Alexander Davison, who's a senior at South Portland High School. Hi, Alex. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for having me.
So what are you doing today?
Well, moments before this, I organized a sit-in demonstration at South Portland High School, and we had student speakers who gave speeches, quotes, poems. We led a song. We sang This Land Is Your Land. We sang the first verse of that, and we changed the New York Islands to our home in Maine. And we also did some chants to No Hate, No Fear, Immigrants Are Welcome Here. And it was a very, very beautiful moment of solidarity at South Portland High School. Also, I have coordinated a food and toiletry drive here at South Portland High School called The Little Kitchen. This is a space for people to access resources that they may need, and also an outlet for people who want to help. And it has been very successful this past week. We have helped numerous community members, students, their families, neighbors, and it's been really awesome. And I am so grateful for my community and all of their support.
Alex, I want to ask you, so you're a high school senior, 17, 18 years old. Do you think that you represent your generation? Do others care as much as you do?
I am sure others care as much as I do. And I do, I'm also the student representative for our school board here in South Portland too. So there is an element of responsibility that I have taken on as well. My work is by no means related to the school board. But I think that has put me in a position of leadership to step up for my community, for sure.
Alex, thanks so much for calling in. Alex Davison is a student at South Portland High School. I'm going to read a couple emails back-to-back here, Sarah. The first is from Sandy, who writes, I do not have kids in school anymore, and I'm not a member of a church, but I do want to help folks that are ICE targets. I can walk kids to school or give people rides to school, work, or other appointments, or deliver groceries. How do I get involved? And then an email from Alex says, I want to share a useful resource, the Maine Matters newsletter published by local children's book author Amy McDonald, My Awesome Mom. In it, she shares resources for readers to donate to local immigrant and democracy rights organizations, continuously updated information to find upcoming protests all over the state, and information on how to contact our representatives. So Alex wants to give the link. That's amymcdonald1.substack.com. So let me ask you, Sarah, though, if somebody's listening and wants to get involved, my understanding is that there's almost like a waiting list for some of these efforts.
Yes, there's a lot of organizations that are overwhelmed, like Angela Stone was saying, overwhelmed in the best possible way with volunteers. But I think, so one really easy way that is tangible is to financially donate to the Maine Solidarity Fund. That is, if you just Google Maine Solidarity Fund, you'll find it. And it is a collaboration effort of many organizations coming together to provide for people's needs in this moment. But there are a lot of organizations doing food delivery right at this time. And some of those are The Locker Project, Food for All, Presente, and Family Promise are both have been doing that long term and are continuing to do that. South Portland Food Pantry and Hope Acts and the Maine Health Food Pantry is also delivering food. So all of those places are places people can donate and also potentially volunteer. I think there are school watches in your neighborhoods and neighborhood watches. And so it's really, there's a vetting sort of thing that, you know, it's not just a public, like anybody can join because we're trying to keep people safe. And so talk to your neighbors. Ask them if they're involved. Encourage them to be involved. Get a connect. Somebody you know is involved in this. And so ask that question and make those connections. And then you're going to be a trusted person that's known to someone else who can also get you involved.
We'll go to Louise Laura, who's calling from Portland. Hi, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. My name is Laura Somlio. And I used to be a big-time activist for years, but I have a lot of toiletries in my cabinet in the bathroom. I live at Avesta Housing, and if someone is able to pick it up, because otherwise I go by bus and I have some trouble walking. Now, imbalance problems, especially with the weather the way it is. So, I can donate toiletries, things that you can use.
Louise Laura, what you're looking for is to find out if somebody could help you get those toiletries to where they belong or where they could be helpful.
Right, yes. And Sarah, I used to know Sarah Merrill and her husband. I forget his name.
Well, Sarah, what's your advice for Louise? Go ahead.
If Louise will give you her phone number, I can have somebody come and pick them up.
Okay, great.
I can't do that for everybody, but I can do that.
Well, luckily for you, Sarah, we're almost out of time. So, Louise, that's what we'll do. Our producer, Cindy Hahn, has captured your phone number, and we'll give it to Sarah, and we can figure that out. So thank you for calling today with your generous offer of help. Sarah, I'm going to ask you a personal question, if that's okay. I'm thinking about your responsibility as pastor of a church that has immigrants who are very scared, very traumatized, who you know well and love and care for. How do you take care of yourself? How do you keep yourself from keeping your chin up, as it were, and not losing faith in humanity and God during this?
Well, really what has buoyed me is to see people caring for one another and doing really beautiful acts of kindness that they would not be doing except for this crisis. And the network of clergy colleagues have become beloved friends of mine, and we are really there for one another in beautiful ways. And also saying, I'm going to be there today. I'm going to do this thing. You don't have to. And giving us permission. Last Sunday at my church, Katie Mears gave the sermon, and they're an Episcopal priest and a part of our congregation. And they said that we say this is a marathon, but not a relay, not a sprint. This is a marathon, not a sprint. But what it really is it's a relay, and that we take turns with doing what we can, and then somebody else takes that from us. So the way that I am managing and going to bed early, that's a practical thing that I'm doing. But also understanding that I am playing a role and that other people are picking up what I'm not carrying. And that for that, I'm really, really grateful.
I think that's such lovely advice, not only for this time, but any other time when people feel as though they're not doing enough for whatever it is, whatever they feel called to do. But then life gets in the way, or they don't have the energy, or whatever it is, that this is a relay, not a sprint or a marathon is really an analogy I think I'll be thinking about for a while.
Yeah, it's really helpful, because this is a long-term thing, and we each have a role, and we also need to rest. And what I'm hoping is that our immigrant friends, that this is really over, as the evidence is piling up, at least for the moment, and that we can all breathe a little more deeply. And as somebody shared at our gathering, multi-faith gathering, that one family is letting their kids go play out in the snow. And that is a beautiful thing that's happening that wasn't happening for the last few weeks. And we want to be free, and we want to breathe easy, and we want to care for one another. So I hope that we can live into that.
Thank you so much for being our guest today. That is Sarah Ewing Merrill. She's Reverend, lead pastor at Hope Gateway in Portland. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandro. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Please know that you can always sign up for the free Main Calling newsletter by going to maincalling.org. Every Friday afternoon, we tell you what shows we're planning for the next week, and also sometimes have some great links that were mentioned on the past week's show. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.